Director Shattering this room. At this time, we would turn to the Torah, but since the author of this statement in Habakkuk is the same author as the individual, the creator God of the universe who authored the Torah, I thought we would answer Dwight's question. Dwight has called in from Dallas saying that when he reads Chabaouk, which is the real name of the prophet. Chabaouk, it means embrace this, means to accept what God is saying through this prophet. Habakkuk is the corruption of that name in our Bibles. If you look at the second chapter, the fifth verse. Now, I'm by citing this, Dwight. I want you to know that I have a standing rule, which is I never ever quote anything Yahweh says out of context, ever. And that is because context is the key to understanding. So in questioning Paul, you will find the entirety of the first and second chapters of Chabaouk cited, so that every aspect that can be gleaned from the context of the prophecy is known. And when you do that, what you find is that God is specifically addressing a lone male individual, and that this individual is someone who will make himself known during the time of the Moed. The Moed are explained in the fourth day of creation and throughout the Torah. The Moed are the seven invitations to meet with God. The first four of them were fulfilled in year 33 CE, which was year 4000 Yah. And then it says the understanding of this will be known in the last days. And then regarding this individual, God has much to say that is all incriminating of a singular individual, and that would be the author of half of the Christian New Testament, the person who chose the name Paulos, which means lowly and little in Latin, but was born with the name Shaul. Paul admits that he was born with the name Shaul twice, and he does so specifically when he sees the flashing light that was actually Satan on the road to Damascus. So this is what God has to say about him in the fifth chapter, which is the place where Shaul was listed by name. And I would also tell you, just as a prerequisite to reading this to you, Dwight, is that in every book that I write, since I go to the oldest extant sources of the what is cited, in this case the Dead Sea Scrolls, to present what is being read, that I encourage everyone to investigate for themselves. I don't want anyone to trust me. I want instead everyone to be able to go through the process of learning for themselves, to be able to verify for themselves. So in everything that I quote, I provide each of the Hebrew words so that you can look them up in a lexicon. And so there's two things that you need to be able to verify these, and both are available free online. One is one or more Hebrew and English interlinears, so that you can check that I have properly presented the words as they are transliterated from Hebrew to English. And second, so that you can look up each of those words in a Hebrew English lexicon or dictionary. And you can do both of those things. So this reads, moreover, from off, because, from key, the intoxicating wine and inebriating spirit, from Ya'in, of the man, Gibur. Gibur is an individual human being, male, of deceptive infidelity and treacherous betrayal, Bagad, is a high-minded moral failure. Ya'ir is arrogant, meritless, and presumptive. He will not find rest, peace, nor live. Wallow na'ah. He will not succeed or achieve his aim. Whoever is open to the broad path, Ashir Rachad, the wide, opportunistic, and improper way, associated with, from Ka, Shaul. Now, Shaul is written exactly as you would find not only this Shaul, the individual known as Paul, but it's written identically to the Shaul that the Israelites long ago chose as their king, to which Yahweh was adverse. It is Shaul. It is the personal and proper name of the individual that God is speaking of. And the name means, in Hebrew, to question him. Now, in English Bibles, you will sometimes see this Shaul written as Sheol. Now, the reason that they do that is they don't want, the most Bibles are published by Christian publishers, and they don't want to condemn their New Testament, so they change it to Sheol. Now, the problem doing that is that Sheol is not the name of a geber, of a man. Sheol is a place. Sheol is the place of the dead. It's the place of questioning, which has been corrupted using the Hebrew word hell. So Sheol is the actual name of the place known as hell. But that place is not a man, which means that that pronunciation of these letters is improper. So it has to be Shaul. Then it continues. He and his soul are like the plague of death. This is from Hugh, which is he, third person, masculine, singular. And his soul, nephesh, are like from ka, the plague of death, maweth, a pandemic disease which kills a large population of people. And so, from wa, those who are brought together by him, accepting him, akaf el, will never be satisfied, lo saba, will never find contentment or fulfillment. Most every Gentile, goyim, will gather together unto him. This is from Kabatz El, all of the people from different races and nations, kol ha goyim. So here, God is talking about the broad way of the religion that was born out of Paul's words, Christianity, of which Yahusha speaks about in the Sermon on the Mount, saying that that broad path leads to death. And he says that broad path is associated with Shaul. And anyone who accepts it, who associates with it, with this man of treacherous betrayal, will find no satisfaction. And he specifically refers to Gentiles who have been brought together by him, who have accepted him, saying they will never be satisfied or find contentment or fulfillment in his promises. Those are the words. Dwight, I hope that's helpful, and I would encourage you, once you have the opportunity to read it, to verify that all of those words are, in fact, in the Hebrew text, that I omitted no words, that I added no words, and that I properly conveyed the words. And then I would encourage you to look up each of those words in a Hebrew lexicon or dictionary to verify that they are properly translated. And if they are...
That's chapter 5 right there.
Pardon?
What chapter?
That is the second chapter, the fifth verse. Now, so that you know, it is set into a context where every reference in that context is condemning of a lone individual, Paul.
Okay.
And it goes on to condemn Paul, and the preceding part of this was a condemnation of Paul. It is, you know, it's a statement from Yahweh saying that all of those who have engaged in the Christian religion will find no satisfaction, that Paul's soul was corrupt, and that he is the plague of death. And it's true, you know. What Paul preached was wrong. What Paul said was that Yahweh's Torah teaching, that his Torah testimony enslaved, that it could not save anyone, and God's position is just the opposite. He says that the Torah is the only means to salvation. Paul says that the Torah has been annulled, and Yahusha said, not a single jot or tittle of the Torah has been annulled. He says, don't think that I came to annul the Torah. No. Yahusha's position and Paul's position are the opposite. That's why Yahweh's position, who's God, and Paul's statements are the opposite of one another. If God told you the truth, then Shaul is lying. Paul is lying. And since Paul claims to be representing Yahweh and Yahusha, even if Yahweh and Yahusha lied, Paul can't be telling you the truth. I mean, there is no rational way that Paul's credible. And, of course, in his letter to the 2 Corinthians, Paul says that he is demon-possessed. He also admits in that same letter that he is insane.
Right.
It's a shame that billions of people, that billions of people have believed this man. Why? I mean, it's just a travesty. And you know, the thing that is also a shame is that, Dwight, that most Christians think that they are followers of Jesus Christ and that their religion is based upon Jesus Christ. And what these Christians don't realize is there's no Jesus. No one even remotely akin to that name that represents God or that was here during the first century. His name is Yahusha. If you know his name, you know who he is. If you don't know his name, you're clueless as to who he is. Yahusha means Yahweh saves. It's presented as Yahusha 220 times in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. There's no Jesus. You know, and Christ isn't even a reasonable translation of the Hebrew title. And it's a Hebrew title, not a Greek title, which means we should never have transliterated the sound of the Greek. You know, his title is Masayah. It means the implement doing the work of Yah.
Right.
And if you're a follower of Yahusha, since he was resolutely Torah observant, you have to be Torah observant. And the moment you're Torah observant, you can't be a Christian.
That's true. True.
And if you look at Yahusha's statements on what we call the Sermon on the Mount, it wasn't a sermon, it was the instruction on the Mount. His emphasis throughout is the Torah. And he says, you know, not a single stroke of the Hebrew letters that comprise the Torah is going to be annulled. Not one of them is going to be discounted. They all are in full effect. And they're going to remain in full effect so long as the heavens and the earth exist. You know, don't think I came to annul them. He's telling you that everything that Paul would say is a lie. And then he even ends it by saying, you know, all those people that are calling him Lord, Lord, not one of them calling him Lord is going to enter heaven. And the reason is that if you know God as Lord, you don't know God. Because Lord is the adversary. Yahweh's position is he wants to be dad, just father, father of the covenant. And so if you're calling him Lord, you don't know him. And he says, get away from me, all of you who are without the Torah. The Torah is the means to salvation. It's God's guidance. It's the path to home. It's the means to empower the promises of the one and only covenant. So, Dwight, I'm really glad that you asked your question, and I hope I've done justice to it. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Just a quick departure from what we've been talking about, and I'm going to return to it in Dwight's question about Habakkuk. And its influence on the religion of Christianity, because it completely destroys the myth that Paul was a spokesperson for God, and that the religion of Christianity is a means to salvation. Over this weekend, the Philippines were hit by the strongest storm in recorded history. And the impact appears to have been absolutely devastating. And we were talking over the break that these storms, while they do have a tendency to ravage the Philippines and Indonesia, I don't think there's any place that receives the brunt of more storms than does the United States, particularly the South Central or the central part of the United States with the tornadoes, of which the most recent plague has been more deadly and more devastating than any other swarm of tornadoes in recorded history. And there's been a 10-year assault of massive storms, most of which have hit the United States over the past 10 years. And we also know that tsunamis and earthquakes are also growing at an exponential rate. There have been more 8 and higher Richter scale earthquakes and more resulting tsunamis than any other time in recorded history. We share this because the Habakkuk prophecy, Yahweh said that the testimony that it reveals and the information, the enlightenment, would be for the last days. Yahusha also speaks of the last days, and he says that they will be known for the birth pangs, which means greater frequency and greater intensity of megaseismos. And megaseismos includes tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, and tsunamis. So it is it's a tragedy. It's not an act of God. God did not create this horrible storm. But he has seen our future, and he told us in our past what we should expect in the last days, and we are indeed enduring it. You know, he also added to that list a worldwide terrorism. He added to that list a world war, which we have recently and not and also recently encountered, and a number of plagues, both pandemics as well as famine-oriented, in addition to these megaseismos or terrible storms. I'm going to share the next statement from Yahweh, Dwight, because it is so appropriate, and the name of the show is Shattering Myths. There is no myth more important to shatter, particularly for the listening audience to this program, than the myth that the Christianity is a valid religion, well, it is certainly a religion, but just God is opposed to religion, and that Christianity has or can save anyone, because it never has and never will save anyone. It condemns those who promote it, and it victimizes those who succumb to it. This is what Yahweh said through Habakkuk. Chabaouk embraced this following the statement I read from 2:6. This is from 2:5. This is now 2:6. It begins by saying, they do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Shaul means to question him. That's what Shaul means. And so he's playing off that meaning so that you understand I'm talking about this individual, and it's critical that you question him. It says, they do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Terse references to the word they lift up as taunts to ridicule. Almost everything that Shaul does in his letters is he says it is written, and then he takes a terse reference, which means he truncates something that God says, and then he misquotes it, and then by truncating it, taking it out of its context and misquoting it, he uses it to taunt and ridicule what God actually said. In fact, the passage that preceded the one I cited to you in 2:5 is actually a statement that Paul did that very thing to. In fact, twice in his letter to the Galatians, another time in his letter to the Romans, he says that he uses it to say that the Torah cannot save, that the Torah cannot make righteous, when that's not what the statement means at all, not even close. And so God is saying that they don't ask questions about him, any of them about him. Terse references to the word, instead they lift up as taunts to ridicule. This is from Marshall Nassa, along with elusive sayings and mocking interpretations. Malishka. This is precisely how Paul has written his letters. He's telling you, if you look at his letters, his interpretations are designed to mock me. That he's just taking truncated references from the word to taunt and ridicule me. And yet, in spite of this, no one questions him. Oh, there's more to it, and we'll continue in a moment. Returning to Shattering Myths, we're considering this statement after Yahweh specifically condemns Shaul as being treacherous, being a man of betrayal, of being intoxicating, and of being the plague of death, specifically with his outreach to Goyim, to Gentiles, which he claimed for himself. The next statement is that they do not ask questions, any of them, about him. Shaul means to question him. Terse references to the word they lift up as taunts, along with elusive sayings and mocking interpretations, and that is the basis of Paul's argument. His entire argument against God and against the Torah is terse references to the word, lifted up to ridicule, along with elusive sayings and mocking interpretations. It's a perfect summary of Galatians and Romans, which form the bedrock of Pauline doctrine and thus the religion of Christianity. There are hard and perplexing questions which need to be asked of him. And indeed there are. Like, how could someone who claims to speak for God consistently contradict and demean God? And they should say, woe to the one who claims to be great so as to increase his offspring, acting like a rabbi, which is what Paul did. Neither of which apply to him. For how long will they make pledges based upon his significance? It's tragic. It is so obvious that Paul lied, that Paul was a false prophet. And yet, Christians are unwilling to question. The moment you start to question Paul, Dwight, as you know, Christians have an absolute tizzy fit. They accuse you of being satanic. And yet, when you look at Yosha's statements, I'm sure you're familiar with Yosha's open letters in Revelation. The first is to the Ephesians, to the called out assembly in Ephesus. Are you familiar with that, Dwight?
Yes.
Well, Yosha says that the thing that he is particularly pleased with is that the called out assembly in Ephesus did not fall and did not succumb to the false apostle. And he goes on to explain why it was so important that they did not believe the false apostle. And when you look at the time that Yahusha is talking about, he's revealing this through Yahuchanan, who presented Yosha and the Torah's message in Ephesus. And then, of course, we find that Shaul, Paul, came to Ephesus to undermine them. Paul and Timothy talk specifically of hunting down Yosha's disciples and undermining them. And he talks specifically of condemning everything that they did. And so there is one person who specifically admits that he was there, that he came in with his posse, with leading Timothy to fight the battle against the disciples on his behalf, with a totally contrarian message. There's only one person who fits that description of the false apostle. And it's Paul. And there's no other candidate that can even be propositioned. And so Christians have to ignore Yahusha. Yahusha in the Instruction on the Mount, Dwight, you probably know this as well. In his defense of the Torah, which is to condemn Paul, he says, you know, watch out. So lest you be, you know, succumb to the wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, Paul twice admits that he was a Benjamite, which Yahusha says is the wolf. And he says, you know, be careful. There's going to be someone that's going to be claimed to be one of you, and they're going to lead you away from the Torah. Don't let that happen. There's only one candidate in all of human history that fits that prophecy. It's Paul.
Yes, that's true.
And all the entirety of the religion of Christianity is based upon his lies. Dwight, have you read the original version of Questioning Paul, or are you just beginning to consider the rewrite of it?
I've begun reading. I have made more than just the first part of the first chapter.
Okay.
But I've been listening to your program since July. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. I encourage you to continue to listen. And also, if you want to really focus on the Chabaouk statement, for the past 4 or 5, maybe even 6 Fridays, I do a Shabbat, Sabbath, scriptural radio program on Yada Yahweh Radio. And if you Google Yada Yahweh Radio, it'll take you right to the site. And the last 5 or 6 Friday evening programs have been devoted entirely to Chabaouk and Habakkuk. So listen into them. That'll give you a lot of insights on them. And I think it will help you in your study. And Dwight, I just want to encourage you. You know, the right choice is to seek to know God and question those things that are opposed to him. And if you are devoted to doing that, my friend, you're going to end up in the right place, which is the covenant.
I have gone all the way back to the October the 4th Shabbat session on the Fridays. I have been listening. Yeah. I knew.
Oh, good.
I don't know if you saw. Well, October the 4th. I know I went back to October the 4th and this and fall.
Good. Good. Well, I encourage you to. The more you know, the better. And the more you question, the better. You know, it's. That's the right thing to do. And Yahweh doesn't even mind when you question him. You know, he's, because if you question him, you want to know, you know, he had five terms and conditions that were associated with participating in his covenant. And, you know, you ought to question him, you know, study the Torah. Decide for yourself that those are the five things that he asked of Abraham. Did Abraham act upon those five things? And then, you know, study and consider what God said are the benefits of that covenant, which were also five things. You know, he said, I'm going to perfect you. I'm going to make you immortal. I'm going to adopt you into my family. I'm going to enrich you. I'm going to empower you. And then you associate those five things with what are the benefits of the first four Moed Mikre. Pesach, we become immortal. Matzah, we become perfect. Bukodom, we become adopted into his family. Shavuot, we're enriched and empowered. And as you find affirmation, the pieces all fit together. Embrace what you learn. Share it with your family.
Nah. I had attended Passover and Pesach. It was under another, but it was another organization. And, you know, since then, I've found there were tests and infrared teaching. So I don't even know if those apply to me.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this. First of all, you probably know that that another organization really wouldn't apply to us, and that we have no organization. There is really no we apart from the covenant. I mean, those who listen to this program, those who read the books like YadaYah.com, QuestioningPaul.com, IntroToGod.org, all of us have only one thing in common, and that is we value and love Yahweh's testimony. And we consider his testimony in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms trustworthy and reliable, and we focus on it and we share it. So if there's a leader, it's Yahweh. And if there is a constitution, it's the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And apart from that, there is no us, other than we have embraced the terms and conditions of his covenant. But it's his covenant, not our covenant. Now, let's talk about the seven invitations. You mentioned Pesach, Passover, and what is right and what is wrong. There is a terrible misconception, Dwight, of the Torah that has been promoted by Paul and by rabbis like Paul, that conveys the misnomer that the Torah is law and that God wants us to obey him, and that if we obey his law then and are perfect in obedience to his law, that he'll save us. None of that is true. Torah does not mean law. It means teaching, guidance, direction, and instruction. And guidance and laws are very different things. Fathers give their children's guidance. They do not lay down the law. There is no Hebrew word for obey. So it's impossible for God to ask us to obey him when he doesn't even have a Hebrew word that denotes that concept. Because he's into free will. He wants us to choose to act upon his guidance. Choosing to respond to someone's guidance is a far cry from obeying. Also, the Torah recognizes that we're flawed. I mean, the most flawed individual presented in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is a fellow that we know as David. His actual name is Dod. Dod means love in Hebrew. And he was about the most flawed guy that I've ever read about. I mean, he was involved in treason. He lied. He was involved in adultery. He even had one of his generals killed so that he could... add that general's wife to his harem. God made it very clear that he was not pleased with Dod's behavior. But it's not our behavior that is responsible for our salvation. Dod wrote the most inspiring and insightful songs to how to properly observe the Torah and act upon the covenant. Like the 119th Psalm, which you'll find delineated for you in the in one of the chapters of An Introduction to God, which is anintroductiontogod.com or introtogod.org. When you read that, you'll find that Dode, David, not only understood how to properly observe the Torah, which is to examine it, consider it, and then act upon what you learn. It is based on that this man, who was highly flawed in his behavior, was righteous, was saved by God, was called righteous by God. And that alone tells us that it's not by obeying the Torah that we're saved, because Dode didn't do that. It's by observing it, coming to know Yahweh through it, coming to understand what he's offering because you've studied it, and then responding to his offer. And so the covenant, which is the purpose of the Torah, is its benefits are enabled by these five, these seven invitations to meet with God, Dwight. And it's not about how you do them, but just simply about answering the invitation and capitalizing upon them, asking Yahweh while you're in the midst of them to bequeath you with their benefits. And when you answer the invitation to meet with God on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, which are three successive days in the spring, then the response that God has to you answering an invitation and meeting with him is to make you immortal, perfect, and his child. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're continuing our conversation with Dwight calling in from Dallas today. Dwight expressed the concern that he observed Pesach Passover, but with an organization, and he found that their teachings weren't accurate, and so he was concerned about that. And what I wanted to share with you, Dwight, is that first of all, Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim are all one event. And they should be looked at one event, because if you were just to celebrate Pesach and not Matzah and Bukurim, it would actually have a counterproductive result. You'd become immortal, but unperfected, and thus eternally separated from God. So they're all one event, so that God can make you immortal, can perfect you, so that you can enter his company, and then adopt you on Bukurim, firstborn children. That said, and even speaking of Shavuah, which is the promise of seven Sabbaths, seven times seven plus one days later, it isn't, I just don't want you to be concerned that you have to do exactly the right thing on exactly the right day, or you don't get the benefit from these things. The very fact, Dwight, that you know that these are important dates to Yahweh, the very realization that from an attitude point of view, you want to meet with him and capitalize on his way, and that you know this is important, you're 90% of the way home. And if you would like to have a more complete understanding of what these 7 days represent, we have spoken of the first four, the next three are Teruah, which is to be Yahweh's troubadour, to share exactly what we're sharing now. And then the Day of Reconciliation, Yom Kippur, Yom Kippurim, because it's reconciliations, plural. And then shelters, which means to camp out with God, which is the result of these six steps lead to the seventh, which is camping out with God, returning to the Gideon's experience in the Garden of Eden. That the moment you come to understand what these things represent, Yahusha came to do relative to these days, what God is offering you, when you make the connection between these days and the promises of the covenant, then everything falls into place. You at that moment that you embrace them, come to know what God is saying and what he's offering, and you capitalize upon it, you've received the full benefits of the covenant. And if you just like to develop your understanding of these days, we've not only talked about them on this program in depth, and you can find archives on Radium that goes into depth on these days. But in addition to that, there's an entire volume of Yada Yah. If you go to yadayah.com, there's an entire volume of books devoted to presenting the Moed Mikre, these invitations to meet with God, and explaining what God has to say about them, what they represent, and so that you can understand them and capitalize upon them. So it's a lot to read, a lot to understand, but I guess the most important thing is I want to tell you that if you're moving in that direction and this is something you want to do, then you're 90% of the way home. And I also want to convey that do not be uptight about understanding them perfectly or doing something perfectly. That's not God's intent. He looks at us as his children. And so long as our hearts are in the right place, our minds are in the right place, we're interested and focused upon listening to what he has to say and paying attention to what he's conveyed by way of his guidance, then that's what God's interested in. And it sounds to me, Dwight, like you're there.
Yeah, I had called in to your show back, I think it was at the end of September, about the black Jews.
Right. I recall your call. We were talking about the Falashas, at least in there is a group of people who have Yehudim, Yisraelite DNA. They're called the Falashas. They live in Ethiopia. But there is a movement in America of people who are erroneously associating themselves with Yehuda and Yisrael, as if their race played into their message and their salvation. What I did is I warned you against associating with them or listening to them. Yisrael is important to Yahweh. Yehudim, which means related to Yah, is important to Yahweh. They are his chosen people. But those of us like you and me, and from your voice, I suspect that you are African-American. I'm Indian-American. That we are adopted into Yahweh's family the same way that those who are naturally born. And so there really is no distinction for us in participating in the covenant. May Yah bless.